So if I help you get one property this year, that's going to make you $35,000 in profits over the next 10 years.
Have you ever wondered the unseen challenges vacation rental managers face? Welcome to Top 10 Mistakes. I'm Brooke Fouts, and I'm on a mission to interview vacation rental managers across the country to uncover the biggest mistakes and golden lessons that have shaped their careers. Each episode delivers real, unfiltered stories of mistakes and triumphs, giving you the insights and strategies to avoid common pitfalls and to accelerate your success in the competitive world of vacation rentals. So buckle up and get ready to dive into today's story of challenge, triumph, and transformation.
And that wraps up another episode of the Ventory Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's deep dive into the world of vacation rentals with our guest. Their top mistakes and the lessons learned along the way are invaluable for anyone looking to grow in this exciting industry. Thank you for tuning in and being part of our community. If you found value in today's episode, please consider subscribing to our podcast. Your support means a lot to us and helps us bring more of these insightful stories and tips directly to you. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave us a review on our podcast app of your choice. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but also helps others in the vacation rental business find us. Lastly, if you know a friend or a colleague who'd benefit from these lessons shared today, don't hesitate to share this episode with them. Sharing knowledge is one of the best ways we can grow together in this industry. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll uncover more secrets to success in the world of vacation rentals.
All right, everybody, welcome back. We're excited today to have Jennifer. Brooke, I'm curious, how'd you originally meet Jennifer?
Oh my gosh. So Jennifer was a partner of ours, but I never met her yet. She was on one of our lowest tiers, I think, or one of our lower tiers. And I reached out to her last year at Streamline. I said, hey, I'm going to be there. It looks like you're going to be there. Why don't we sit down? So we sat down, met, and ended up chatting, and she ended up upgrading some platforms and some services. And yeah, it's been, then we actually ended up co-presenting at Northwest VRP together. And she's been a raving fan of Ventory ever since. And she's, I think every single tier, every single feature that we release, she's what we call an early adopter. We reach out to Jennifer and she signs up for it, but luckily it's been highly successful. So she's been a great partner.
Gotcha. Is Brooke telling the truth there, Jennifer? Is that all true? Or is there any record corrections you want to sneak in here right now? Or?
I'm glad he remembers. Yeah, we were the OG, all we did was online data kind of thing, because I had tried my best to not have to do anything paper, anything, I just did not want to go down that road. So I avoided it at all costs, and it wasn't necessarily working that well. So it was a great time to get sit down with him, come up with a plan that included everything. And like he said, I hear things that he's starting and I'm like, wait, hang on. I need that so bad. Nice. Elsa's amazing, by the way.
Yeah. So Jennifer has signed up for our outsourced fractional business development team. So she's got Alicia, who I swear it's, I think we've got 3 or 4 contracts like last month. Mm-hmm. And I think I just saw one come across this morning. Every couple of days, there's a new contract that comes across that Alicia's signing on behalf of Arrived.
Yep.
Nice. Maybe on that note, Jennifer, could you actually give a little background about Arrived, what markets you guys are focused in, how it got started, et cetera, as well?
Yeah. So I started it when I had babies running in and out of my office all the time. I can't imagine you have any idea what that's like. I'd be on the phone with a guest and I'd have kids and I'd have a housekeeper. Started about 20 years ago with a vacation rental that my husband and I had that was with a company. And we decided I decided I could do it better. And my husband was supportive, which was great. So started with that. And then the next year added one home and the next year added one home and the kids were still coming in screaming. And then I would sidetrack them and then they would come in screaming. And then we'd take them out on inspect houses. It's an adventure. So when they were in school full-time, I decided I wanted to grow the business full-time, because I was not meant to be on PTAs and PTOs, and that didn't interest me. This did. So I started growing it quickly. The first thing I did was sign up with Streamline, which was the best decision I ever made. Signed up with Streamline and then started saying yes to homeowners. I'd been turning people away for a lot of years. So started saying yes, and then doubled it every year for probably the next 5 years, the size of the company. Got to about where we are now, right under 300 properties, some through acquisition, some through organic growth. I do like organic growth more. We've slowed down on the acquisition front about probably 4 years ago. We slowed down on that. I like organic growth. The owners know us and love us, and it's more fun.
especially when inventory gets those deals for you. It's a lot cheaper than for sure.
What other market, Jennifer? Oh yeah, there's that too. Along the West Coast, we're in all over Oregon, Washington, Palm Springs, Kauai, and Oahu. Pretty specialized in the Northwest. A little bit of some warm climates because it's good balance.
Cool. Good stuff. Why don't we do this? Let's just jump right into your top 10 mistakes. So again, Jennifer was one of our co-authors, one of our contributors in the book, and she shared her top 10 mistakes. So what I'll do, Jennifer, is I'll just read them off, and then Conrad will chime in as well and just explain a little bit about it. So number one, not listening to your intuition in all things business. Best if you can stop and listen. Explain that a little bit for us.
Yep. I think that what I would do initially was I would try to grow my business. I wanted to think outside of the box, grow my business like I wanted to do it, which would have been the right thing. But people are talking to you all the time and you hear things and you see how other companies are doing it and you start to think you should be a part of that and you think you should do it their way. And really, it doesn't matter what everyone else is doing in your gut, what the right choice is, and whether that comes to picking a software, if it comes to taking on an owner, if it comes with housekeeping quality, if you're going to give up on that and go down some road where it's just mediocre like everyone else, or if you're going to stick to your high standards, all those things, you just have to stop and listen. I think people say they do their best thinking in the shower or whatever. I think we had traffic, like the roundabouts in Sun River back then, before there were roundabouts in a lot of America. And I remember driving around those roundabouts and just doing my best thinking and going, you know what? Nope, it doesn't matter what I heard, what I'm thinking. This is about me and how I want the business to run. And I want it to be, I want this to be my core value. I want this to be how it looks. So that was definitely where that came from.
Yeah. There was a couple other people I think agreed with you. I know CJ Stamm said the same thing with Southern Comfort Cabin Rentals. Mm-hmm. He says one of the early mistakes he made was not always trusting my gut. James Mannings and Matt Durrett, they said the same thing, not listening to your own business intuition. You can sense when things are right or wrong. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. I feel like you were in the same room with them when they said that, for sure.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting how we have all these people across the country that run their businesses differently, yet we all are so much the same, which is...
That's what I loved about the book. It's you have 520 mistakes between everybody, right? 52 people times 10 mistakes, 520 mistakes, but yet... There was like, it narrowed down really into 10 buckets very neatly. So it's funny. We've all made the same ones. It's ironic.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, those are some good stuff, Jennifer. And thanks, Brooke, there for taking number one for me. Recording in the midst of children, Jennifer, as we alluded to when we hit the
speaking of children running all around.
Yeah, we'll do our best, but we appreciate you. All right. So number two, this one did come up quite a bit. So keeping bad employees too long, trust your gut when you know it's time for them to go. Hate to say it, I feel like everyone's had the same story. So what was the lesson that you had to learn here, Jennifer? And when you later separated from these bad employees, how much better did you feel? It's like a little therapy session, if you don't mind. But
I know it's like the proverbial weight on our shoulders. Yeah, it's hard. You have employees, you want the culture to be positive. You want to be helpful. You want to lead them and lead them to be great leaders. But it's knowing when that cutoff is and when some people just aren't the right fit for the position, or they have different values than you do. And so if you start with someone that has different values or different morals at a base code than you, and it becomes apparent, don't hang on to it. It's not worth it. They're not going to change those core parts of their being, and it's not worth it. It's like a relationship. Don't keep a boyfriend if they don't like you. Get rid of them. If you guys aren't ever going to be like, if you aren't going to stay together forever, don't marry them. That would be silly. So it's the same with an employee. Just know when to say when and don't stick it out. There's no reason to hang on any longer. Drag it out.
Yeah. This came up every single time. I don't think there was one person that didn't mention firing sooner. And I'll give credit to Steve Trover on this one. He calls it the 36 hours of suck. He goes, it's going to suck for 36 hours. It's going to suck firing them. But in the end, it's the best thing for you. And it's also probably the best thing for them too.
Yeah, it totally is. Because they're not happy. They're struggling in their mind also for whatever reason. So, yeah.
Going on. This one actually wasn't as common, Jennifer. So I'm curious your perspective on it. Number three is taking investor money. If you have a good, healthy vacation rental business that is growing and is profitable and structured as you wish, do not get sucked into the hype. So I'm curious, was there some investment money that you had taken, or is that something you were able to skip over and not take? And maybe you saw other folks do that and have some negative consequences from it. I'm curious your point of view on
that. Yeah, no, this was the one that I had to, I'll go back a second. I totally know why you called it top 10 mistakes, because That's going to get people's attention. Everybody wants to see a train wreck. They don't want to see all the things we did right, like the top 10 things that we did right. They don't want to read about that. So I totally get it. But I'm a very positive person, and I think that things happen for a reason. And I live with zero regrets. Like, I'm just very much wired that way. So when I first got the question, I was like, huh, this one is the only one that I could have told you off the top that was like absolutely the biggest mistake. Like, I learned from things, and that's good. And so yes, they're mistakes, and I wish I had known them, but they brought me to a better place. This one, just a big mistake. And honestly, here's two thoughts. I think that people that have taken investor money, you don't know who they are because they went out of business a lot of times and they didn't manage to pull away from it and fix it. So I think that's number one. And number two, if they took investor money and didn't tell you, it's because they were maybe a little bit afraid to admit it too. So yes, not everybody does it for sure. The people that do, I don't think they survive it most often. I think that it's very unique that I was able to get untangled from that. It took a long time, and I was able to get my business back, but it was hard, and it took several years, and they managed to literally steal $2 million. So it was a long, complicated process to get it out. I don't know if they were inept or if they were, we have no idea still if they were inept or if they were criminal, but it was gone. It takes a long time to undo that. It looks sexy. It's what everybody talks about. They talk about getting infusions of money. They talk about growing with that, and you can grow faster. I, once again, don't regret this because I wouldn't be in the markets that I am without the acquisitions, and their money was how I got into those markets, but it was not fun. It was a very negative environment for a long time, and I don't like that. We're such a fun business.
But Jennifer, you're untangled from that now, so you own... Yeah. Holy good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. I now, have a business partner... Process? Yeah, I have one business partner, and him and I own the company. He does accounting, HR, all those things. He actually went through this process with me, thank goodness, because it's who would want to do that by themselves? That would be horrible. I would have been able to do it, but it would have been horrible. It's nice to have somebody to go, what the heck, with every once in a while. So yeah, we were able to get out of it. We own it again, just us. It's good. All good. Absolutely. Yeah. And so that it looks appealing, but if they were silent for a while, they did as was agreed upon for a while. And then real fast, it got worrisome.
Wow. It's funny on LinkedIn, on all the social channels, everybody bragging about their recent round, right? They just raised mm-hmm. $6 million. This is fantastic. But yeah. Is that what you're celebrating, or should you be celebrating actually the growth of your business? I was talking to an entrepreneur the other day who unfortunately had to take some capital, and he positioned it as, I don't think he's, yes, I'm technically CEO of the company, but I don't feel like I own my company anymore. He's, they have all control. They have hiring rights. They have firing rights. They have board votes. Like, I don't even know. I literally feel like I'm an employee at my own company now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would be no fun at all. I managed to, and here's a side little advice for people. I had a really good attorney that wrote up my operating agreement. That's the only reason we were able to get out of it. We would have never gotten out of it otherwise. And I knew what he had written up, so I knew how to get out of it when the time came. But if I hadn't, we would have lost it all. That it was that bad. Yeah. Get a good attorney when you do things too.
For sure. No, that's some good context, Jennifer. I hate that it was as painful as it was to learn, certainly. But yeah, to you, Brooke, I think both bring up good points there, which is that people do celebrate this sort of thing or love to talk about how great it is. And yeah, sometimes the shine isn't quite as shiny when you dig under the hood a little bit on the car. It doesn't quite look as nice, for sure.
Yeah.
Let's head over to number four, a little bit of a different one here. Number four, not being prepared for this to be such a complex business. This reminds me of an old Amy Hynote thing that she had on VRM Intel, where it was lists all the things that a property manager had to know or be involved with. I think it's 70 something things between like taxes and property and maintenance and marketing and operations. So this is a very complex business. There's people online, Jennifer, who claim this is easy passive income. Are you telling them they're wrong? That's not the case. This is hard to do.
I'm totally telling them they're wrong.
Tell us about it.
Because if they're doing it right, if they're really doing it as a profitable business and they're really caring for their owners and they're really caring for their guests and they're really running a profitable business, you have a lot of people that you're taking care of. You have a lot of different accounting systems that you're having to manage. You have a lot of different relationships you're having to manage. One of them, you're taking money from them. One of them, you're giving them money. Another one of them, then you're employing all these vendors and employees. And then you, at the end of the day, want to still have a successful business. So how do you manage all that? And then you have very basic things like buying toilet paper, and you have very complex things like trust accounting. And there's so much there that if you start with one thing and you learn it and you stack it on the next one and you learn it, it's not overwhelming. But if you go into it thinking, I can do it because I know how to do these two things, then you're not going to, it's not easy. I have a whole bone to pick with all those people online this year.
I think Dennis Vicasciola said, this business is hard, like really hard. You know what I mean? And he was very successful in a couple other businesses and had nice exits. And then, how hard can it be? You start this. And same thing with David Angotti. He was very successful in some ed tech businesses and some other businesses. And he's like, all right, how hard can it be? And he ended up after a couple of years selling all the management contracts and just doing the digital marketing side of it because it was really hard. I mean, and you are right. You have to be this expert at so many different things, from hospitality. Yeah. The thing I think that finally hit me was when one person actually, when we had 500 properties and somebody said, Brooke, I think it was one of my teammates. They said, Brooke, we're running a 500 room hotel, but the difference is all the inventory is spread out all across Ocean City. We don't own the inventory. We don't control the inventory, and we don't even control the rates or anything else. That was when the point to me, it was like, oh my gosh, it is like running a 500 room hotel.
Except every room in the hotel is completely unique. It's like you have the old bed and breakfast model of a country room and the forest room or whatever. Every house is its own thing. So nothing's standardized.
No.
I think about that sometimes. I'm like, a hotel would be
easy.
A lot easier. There would be some things, but it would be so much easier.
Well, and just imagine when there's a problem, you could just send someone down the road. Yeah. Or send someone down the hallway.
Oh,
go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah. Cause you know what? Everything's like the same, right? You can go, okay, this hotel room also has a king bed. So you're all set. I think that's what keeps me entertained with this business, though, is having so many different sides of it. So number one, if I feel like I'm not interested in part of it, I can give that to somebody else. I knew accounting was not something that I wanted to deal with on a day-to-day basis, and there was enough of it. And I also did not like the HR aspect of it. So my business partner is actually very adept at those things. So that works out where we can take on the things we want. But then also the employees, you go, okay, I love shopping and helping fix up houses. Then I get bored of that and I can go off and do something else. Through the years, it's changed what I like doing, which parts of it and which of them I hand off. So the complexity of it is actually the fun part for me.
I like that. Number five, then, is a little bit of a different take on this idea, which is that it's very complex. We have to know a million things. Yet number five says not keeping the business as simple as possible. It is inherently complex without adding in more structure. I guess I'm reminded of the quote where it's make this process as simple as possible, but no simpler. The idea that like you have to make things as simple as possible, but there is a stopping point where this is what it is, right? It's 500 different rooms. We're going to have to figure out a way to clean them all. So I guess I'm curious, how have you figured out ways to introduce simplicity into something that is very complicated?
I think the most obvious is direct integrations with software. If you have something that's directly integrated, that's going to simplify it a lot. If you have a solution like Venturi, you just go all in and you say, okay, this is how we do it. We follow these processes here. And then that simplifies it, because anything with owner acquisition, it's all in Venturi. The postcards that go out, the phone calls that come in, the everything, even our business development. Now there's just so many parts of it that are so great. So if you bring those in and wrap them up together, I think it's so easy to get complex then by going, ooh, but now I could add a lock system that then talks to my guest, that then has a guest book over here. If you can combine those all into your software, how much easier is that? Then you figure out which things you need to pull out and specialize in. And you go, okay, we might have three dashboards, but they're going to be three really robust dashboards that do a lot of really great things. You can just end up with people logging into 92 platforms and being really overwhelmed. Your employees aren't going to be happy. Your guests are going to be like, wait, why is this coming from here? I think I could go off on like the whole Airbnb topic, but really why they're probably I'm guessing maybe as successful as they are, is that a guest can go in there, their credit card saved, they book a house, and they're supposed to have all the communication right in that one app, right? That's easy. We all want everything easy. And so if we have an easy product for ourselves and for our guests and for our homeowners, then that's better too. Not we're pulling pieces in and it starts getting complicated.
Yeah, right on. And yeah, things can certainly get complicated. So I like this idea of what you were saying, Jennifer, of bringing them in together, at least where possible. So if you can, instead of having two tools, get the job done with one tool, then that's a better approach, obviously. I think that might tie in then to number six, which is not jumping into a CRM for owner acquisition soon enough. One wonders what system you might have chose. Tried everything else first because it all worked, wasted a lot of time. And then it looks like you did say in here that you did say that you liked Venturi. So what was your introduction into Venturi? How did it later save you time as you began to work on the owner side of the business with Venturi?
Yeah, we had tried mailing, pulling records from the county, matching them up with the mailing addresses, eliminating them, printing labels, printing postcards, who's going to design the post. It was so complicated. It took us so long. And then we got one out and we were like, yay. And then we didn't get any phone calls because you've only sent out one. And then we're like, do we try this again? This is how it goes, right? So yeah, it took us trying everything. I really didn't like, I didn't like the idea of going back to the like original world of sending things out. I wanted it to be all digital, which is why we started digitally with Venturi. But apparently owners actually want to get a piece of paper in their hand. Who knew? So we've figured out that Brooke knew what he was doing. And the more that we put in there, the more owners we get. So then we had a problem because how are we going to deal with all these owners that are calling in? We didn't have the people on the ground in those locations that were able to stop getting a new refrigerator for a homeowner and take a call about a new home and follow up on those. So now having the business development in there is huge also. So every step that we have hit so far, there's been a solution of, oh, now we can add this to it. And then we have that covered too. So it's been very good.
Yeah. I love this one, of course. Thanks for the plug. I did not pay you for this plug. So thank you. I appreciate it. But yeah, I think Ginger Harrelson said the same thing, Conrad, right? She talked about, she was so anti sending out postcards. She did not want to have anything to do with it. She's it's 2022 when she signed up or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to do this all digitally. But guess what? I think it was the first campaign we did for her, this direct oceanfront owner, the property does over $150,000, walked up and met her at the property. She was literally holding the postcard in her hand when she met with her. And then not only did she sign up that property, but she signed up the property across the street as well. And I think that's where Ginger made the comment. She goes, well, I just paid for Venturi for the next 2 years. Right? So she was sold. But she had the same problem, that thing you talked about with the CRM, right? And I think that was your original mistake was here, not jumping into a CRM for owner acquisition soon enough. We found many of our partners, up to 50% of the deals that they're closing are deals that were in a long-term nurturing sequence. Here's the thing. People aren't ready to buy right there on the spot. They don't like, maybe they're sitting on 80,000 reservations. Maybe they got to do some renovations. Maybe they want to use it for a little while. So you don't have the bandwidth. I've been in your shoes. You don't have the bandwidth to sit there and constantly do that follow-up. But you have this CRM that can do it for you. I've said this before. It's like giving Tony Stark the Iron Man suit. It makes him like superhuman. It can like just do that auto drip. It can actually do voicemail drops to him. It can send text messages. It can do all these different things. And you don't even have to think about it because, again, you're wearing, Jennifer, like I was in your shoes. You're wearing 18 hats. You don't have the bandwidth to do that every single day to do it. So why not leverage these tools? And the beauty of kind of, not to be a shameless plug here for Venturi, but when I set up my sale, I actually use Salesforce. We paid $37,000 to a Salesforce implementer to set up all the workflows, to set up all the sequences, to do all those different things. But that is out of the box, like ready to go for you with Venturi, like turnkey. Now, if you want to customize it, you have that full right to do it. It's easy to do. It's simple to do. It's intuitive. But again, if you don't want to set up, if you don't want to write all those, the copywriting and all that stuff, just hire us and we'll do it for you. So again, shameless plug for Venturi there. Sorry.
And it costs a lot less than $37,000 too.
That's exactly what I tell people. I'm like, you can try to save money by talking to your local title company or your realtors, but it's by the time you get done with all those steps, there's no way. There's no way.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Awesome. Well, let's head it over to number seven now that the Venturi commercial is over. I joke, but I'll get it. Number seven, not hiring team members for owner acquisition soon enough, not often enough through stages of growth. So the team needs time and focus to keep owner relationships strong and acquisition, however you structure that. I joke because the commercial is going to keep on going. No, but what was the change that you made? I'm also interested, we could certainly talk about the owner acquisition piece. You mentioned keeping owner relationships strong. So maybe that could be the first part. What did you change to make owner relationships better? And then how do you adjust things to make owner acquisition from the people perspective a little bit stronger too?
Yeah, so it's got to be that prioritization on a day-to-day basis of our owner services team. So we have them communicating with the owners about everything. If they have too many owners that they're working with, say if they're past their capacity, plus they're supposed to be talking to new homeowners, they're not going to call, they're going to take the refrigerator died phone call first. And then next they're going to take the new homeowner call, but that leaves no time for sure to call up the owner that just hasn't had a phone call from us for 4 or 5 weeks. That's starting to get long. And they're like, wait, what's going on with my house? And then they start stewing and thinking they know. And then you're playing defense instead of offense. So you definitely have to be playing offense and keep the relationship strong. You want to hear from the people that you have a relationship with. And this is a relationship business. So they have to have time for that. And to have enough staff to have time for that is really hard to do, because then as you're growing, you get, maybe they can handle a certain number, but you have 15 homes more than that. And all of a sudden they're starting to struggle, but you don't really have enough room to hire a full-time other person. So that's been the balancing all the time. In fact, I think I even did these before we got set up with our business development through Venturi, but that's been such a, like, that's been such a no-brainer for me, because that takes one of the layers off of what they're doing. They have a lot to do, and the relationship is so important once they've signed on. But like we were just saying, that drip campaign and following up in person and all those things that happen before they sign up is equally as important. Otherwise you don't get them.
All right, let's talk about the hiring team members for owner acquisition. I don't even know exactly what you did, Jennifer, before you hired Venturi's fractional business development team. What were you doing? Were you doing it yourself, or did you have a full-time person?
We tried lots of things. I was really probably the only one that was very successful at it. We did have two of our owner services people were actually pretty good at signing up owners, but they were also really good at taking care of existing owners. So you couldn't, it was a tug of war all the time. We did try over the years though to hire people on site to do it. That's not great. If you have somebody that's on site that is full-time supposed to be doing that, you've got to have, well, here, this is going to go back to, I really think you have to listen to Brooke and get cultural indexing going on and all these things, because that is such a specific personality that can do that. That's way harder to hire for than most anything else in the company for a lot of reasons. You can end up with the perfect person you think, but really their ultimate goal is to go start their other business, for example. So even if you get through 10 of the steps, their 11th is their end game of starting their own company, and they're going to go run away with some of your owners, which that happened. We've had everything. We've had, if somebody can sell you an Eskimo on Kauai, like a, what are they, like those huts, what are the, whatever, the, like an igloo, if they can sell you an igloo on Kauai, that's really great, but they're also probably not going to actually sign up any owners because they just sold themselves and it was all just an igloo on Kauai. And so we had that too. They seemed like the best salesperson ever, never did a thing. There's a lot that can go wrong, and I think we had it all go wrong. Just learn more, it's all good.
Yeah, I find that sometimes, Brooke, this has happened a few times in our conversation so far. It's the leadership of the company knows the financial rewards that come from additional homeowners. So they're motivated. They want to push that forward, and they know that's going to help the company grow. Sometimes the people on the team who are maybe dealing with the problems, they think, oh no, another homeowner, and they roll their eyes. So you do have to have the right person in that seat, right? Who's motivated not only financially, to Jennifer's point, it's also the right personality for the role too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's go ahead and go over to number eight, moving along here. Number eight, taking on owners and properties that we shouldn't. Don't say yes to everyone. So hate to say it, this was a common one, but what was kind of
I was going to say, is this the most common one you had?
It might have been.
Definitely top three for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. What was your learning here, Jennifer?
They're time wasters. I don't care what your ROI is on an owner, like on a house. If the owner isn't a great fit with your company, the ROI just went to zero. There is nothing that can help you recover from that, because they're taking so much of your team's time, like physically and emotionally. It's just not worth it. So enough said on that.
Yeah. It's the toxicity, right? You don't, the last thing you want to do is lose good employees because of one bad owner. No one bad owner is worth losing a good teammate for sure.
Yeah.
I think maybe the lesson for people listening as they're shaking their heads right now or nodding and going, yeah, that makes sense, is you can have more control when you have more lead flow coming in, right? If you have more owners coming in the door, then you feel fine letting the bad owner go because you're not worried about it. I've been in similar situations in the past with clients. Firing clients is not a fun thing for us to do because just letting revenue walk out the door. But if you have two more proposals out, you don't feel so bad about it, right? Because you're like, yeah I'm going to lose this person because they're not a good fit, but I have this new opportunity coming. So it's also, this also is a lesson in doing more owner marketing because you're going to have more leads coming in, and then you could pick the ones that really are a good fit. To your earlier point, Jennifer, about it being more like a marriage. If that's the only date you have, you get a little desperate, and desperation is a stinky cologne, I've been told. Let's go over to number 9 then. Not hiring someone early in the business to ensure accounting is dialed in daily, weekly, monthly, makes it a big push every few weeks and creates a lot of unnecessary stress. I know you touched on this earlier. The partner that you have in the business is more of this side of it, and that's an important thing. But accounting came up a lot. Trust accounting came up a lot. So what was the adjustments you made as you grew with accounting?
Yeah, I don't like accounting. I knew it from the day I started. So I actually did, you guys are going to like just lose all respect for me. Just kidding. I did cash accounting for the first 4 years of my business, so I did that as in every month, whatever came in for a house, I would pay the owner out at the end of that month, because I didn't have an accounting system, number one. So it was easy to do it that way, as opposed to if I had a software, it would have been a nightmare. But it was very easy to do it that way. I knew where the money was. I wasn't going to commingle funds. It basically kept me having an honest business without having to run through like the rigmarole of whatever and find somebody that could help with the accounting system. So that was, it worked for a while, but it was all on my shoulders. I didn't love it. I hated paying owners every month and reviewing all that and getting them ready and writing the checks and all the stuff. When I signed on with Streamline, they actually created cash accounting for me, believe it or not, that I used for about 3 months. And then I was like, this is silly. So I went to Trust Accounting. I got a business partner that likes accounting. We have a bookkeeper. And yeah, just the efficiencies in that, having that all off my plate. I can go through the owner statements, which I don't actually really do like much anymore. Like it's a brief glance, but I can go through the owner statements after the four other people have gone through the owner statements in a matter of minutes, as opposed to like spending hours every month on a few of them. Having those systems in place is game changer from being all consumed by accounting to then all of a sudden being able to run a business and have the accounting flow like it should. I like zeros. I like things to match at the end of every night. But I don't want to be in the middle of it. So that got us to that point, which is just worthwhile. And I still didn't have to stress about being upside down in the business. So many people, we've done enough acquisitions. So many people in the business are upside down. And that looks so stressful to me when I see people's books where they're upside down. I'm like, wow, I can't imagine trying to sleep at night. It would be so hard. I'd be wide awake at 3 o'clock every morning stressing out. So it's been good having the systems go well and not having to deal with that for sure.
I got a call from a gentleman a couple months ago and he was totally upside down and he was desperate at this point. He was trying to sell his business because he realized like he owed all of his owners money and he didn't have the money to pay it. So
yeah. Jennifer, so it's a common story, which is very sad.
Yeah. So I want to go back to what you were saying. So you would, every single month you would pay your owners based on even like deposits that they received on those reservations?
Yeah, I did. And I bet your next question is what happened if they canceled?
What happened if they canceled?
Nobody canceled. I was really good at what I did. Really. I knew the flow of, I actually was so good at booking homes beyond what anybody else in our market was. So every month they had money coming in. So if they had a refund if it was March and they had a refund for a reservation in July, it was fine. But it worked out fine. But there were only like 10 homes at this point. It was
So I'll give you one. So when I had Vantage, that was the way it was done in Ocean City. And I tried to change everybody, like, no, we're not going to do it. But every single owner was so used, they were so conditioned to get paid as soon as the reservation was made. But we didn't have a cancellation like the way, so it ended up working out. But yeah, it made an accounting nightmare for sure. But that was the policy. That was the same exact policy in Ocean City, Maryland back then.
That's interesting. I wonder if that used to be more common. I know when I started it, I didn't actually know what anybody else did. Like when I started my company, didn't know what anybody else did. And I did it different than everybody because of that. And a lot of things that I did, turned out to be how the world's gone now, which is where my intuition part comes from. Yeah. So I know that I was doing things right and made really good choices, but it was interesting to build it not knowing and then see where we've come through the time. So that's really interesting, actually, that people used to pay it that way in Ocean City. I didn't know anybody did it really.
There was a couple people that aligned with you. So Andrew with Joseph Ellen Properties, he said, pay for a high quality bookkeeper. You will eat more capital doing it yourself or going the cheap route. And then I love Jason Sprinkle admitted, we waited too long to get a strong accounting team in place. It's not something you want to go back and try to clean up. It is the foundation of your data-driven metrics out of the gate. Your financials tell you what's working and what's not working. Even when you're small and need a great set of books, start with great accounting. And Jason's seen it all. That was a great quote from him in the book.
It was. Awesome, Jennifer. Well, we're rounding it out with number 10 here. So we're on the home stretch. Number 10, getting swept up in the latest trends, both micro and macro trends. Our industry is always changing, and often these things are just trends and not actually vetted. So I feel like this is one where it's context dependent and situation dependent. But what was your evolution here? Did you hop on a lot of things early and then regret it? Or did you go through a different evolution process as the business grew?
I really don't regret much. Like I said earlier, I tend to not regret things like the money, right? Getting investor money, that was definitely a trend that seemed safe because everybody else was doing it. It was just how it was going. It was part of the system. Then down to smaller things like technology. Are you really going to jump on the latest thing? Or are you going to see if it actually works? Are you going to vet that at all? Or are you going to just jump in? So there are some things that, like, going back to my number one, your gut, some things you just know are going to work well. And you just have been waiting for that to come around and you just jump in and you do it and it works out well. But don't just jump on it because that's what the other competing companies are doing, because maybe they got something fancy to hang on the wall that costs a lot of money. Maybe that works, maybe it doesn't. But do you want to be the first rollout of it and spend a bunch of time and money and effort and then have to fill in all those holes on the wall later? I don't. So that's where that comes from. There's been things always that I watch and just, I tend to be wait and see a little bit. Except, look, I just like proved myself wrong, because how many times have I jumped in? Brooke's like, here, I have business development. I'm like, okay.
You're early adopter for us, right?
And then you're like, hey, there's this whole big box thing. And I'm like, sign me up. Can we start that last week? And then, yeah, all the time. So,
But I think that's where experience comes from too, Jennifer, right? Is you've got to have a little, back to your intuition comment from number one, you've got to be able to look at something and go, let me see this all the way through. And I think the relationship with Venturi, hopping on some of those things early, those have provided benefits. Those have provided immediate benefits to you and the company, it sounds like. So you feel more comfortable doing that. And maybe you'll make a mistake here and there and jump on something too early. It doesn't work in your market. And that's okay, because you can point to 10 wins on the wall and say, I'll take a loss or two. But yeah, to your point, there are people right now going through changes like the one that you're describing, and it's going to be very painful to undo that. And they had all the best intentions, I'm sure, on both sides. And it just
we're all just trying to do what we can do. Absolutely. And sometimes we get swept up in the emotional decision and haven't really actually thought it through.
Yeah. Awesome. Brooke, I think we've got one more question for Jennifer, don't we? To bring us home here.
We do. Yeah. So Jennifer, I know it's only 2 years ago, but if you could go back to and talk to your 25-year-old self and give her some advice, what would it be?
I'm only 23.
Oh, gotcha. So if you could hop in a time machine.
Since it's 2 years into the future, don't overthink it. Just trust your gut. Go with your instinct, because you know what you're doing. And that has been what's kept me rolling and kept me happy always. Maybe that. So maybe being happy. Just stay happy. I love being happy and I've been happy. It's all good.
I'll give you that to you, because you definitely always have a positive attitude. Every time I see you, you're smiling and having fun. Yeah. So it's been a joy to have you as a partner here at Venturi.
And same.
Appreciate you jumping on the pod here. So thank you.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Thank you, Jennifer, for your time. We really do appreciate it. We'll be back next week with a new episode. So stay tuned and more to share. We'll catch you on the next one. Thanks so much.
And that wraps up another episode of the Venturi Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's deep dive into the world of vacation rentals with our guests. Their top mistakes and the lessons learned along the way are invaluable for anyone looking to grow in this exciting industry. Thank you for tuning in and being part of our community. If you found value in today's episode, please consider subscribing to our podcast. Your support means a lot to us and helps us bring more of these insightful stories and tips directly to you. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave us a review on our podcast app of your choice. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but also helps others in the vacation rental business find us.
Lastly, if you know a friend or a colleague who'd benefit from these lessons shared today, don't hesitate to share this episode with them. Sharing knowledge is one of the best ways we can grow together in this industry. Stay tuned for our next episode, where we'll uncover more secrets to success in the world of vacation rentals.